Accession number 30398, Mr. Nathan Ritz, Real 8. Now, tell me about your demobilisation.
Oh, well, what happened was, we got our papers they gave us, and they gave us a travel warrant, and they gave us some money, which some pay, which we got. And because we'd saved some of my money, and I got all the money out of what I'd saved, they gave me that as well. And they said, right, you're now going to do 5 years in the territorials, which we already...
Five.
We had to do 2 years and five. I've got it in my pay book in there, I'll show you. We had to do 5 years because I don't know why we had to do 5 years. Anyway, I came out of there and he said, right, you've got to report to the Tower of London. I thought, Tower of London? No bloody army in the Tower of London, which I didn't realise there was. There was a barracks in there. Anyway, me and this Spud Murphy, we were the only two that were in this particular thing. So we both went in, and we went in, you know, usual thing, sergeant, mate, bum, 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 left, right, left, right. Oh, he said, right. Oh, he said, I see you're a tradesman, corporal. So I said, yes, sir, I am. So he said, you're a signaller, aren't you? So I said, yes, I am, sir. Oh, he said, I tell you what, he said, you walk down that hallway and into that door, there's a man there, he said, he will throw his arm around you and virtually kiss you. He's in charge of the territorials signal corps platoon. I thought, there we go again. So I goes, knocks on the door, come in. Oh, he said, oh, he didn't know what to do for me. He said, oh, he said, at last I got somebody who know. He didn't know a damn bloody thing. So there's all these blokes standing around. They're all territorials, not regulars, been in the army. They're all learning. They're learning to be signals. And he said, right, now you go with these five blokes and show them what is wrong with each set. And I had to teach them. I thought, I've come back and I'm teaching these guys again. So he said to me, right, we haven't got a sergeant, so you become the sergeant of the platoon. I said, I don't want to. He said, you will, because I've got nobody else. So I became the sergeant of the platoon. So in one easy step, I was went from a lancer to a sergeant.
How often was it always at the Tower of London? That's the Royal Fusiliers Depot, isn't it?
Yes, it is the Royal. I didn't know at the time, but it is the Royal Fusiliers Depot. Yeah.
And that's where you had to report?
Yeah, I had to report to this, whoever this captain was.
So how often did you go?
Well, not very often, because you only had to do sort of, and then every so often you had to go out on the scheme for a fortnight, but it was very seldom. And when Suez came along, I got called up again. Because I was a reserve, you see.
You didn't have to go, though?
Yeah, I went into Suez. And I wasn't there long, a couple of weeks, and I went home again. I don't know why I went out there. I really don't, because they wanted somebody who knew how to set up, you know, the same thing that I'd been doing. And they didn't have anybody who knew what they were doing. It's most peculiar. I mean, I got another bloke in my club. He was a signaller. He said, bloke just came up to me, he says, you're going to be a signaller. He said, I don't know nothing. He said, oh, well, you pick it up as you go along. So he never even went on the course or anything. So he didn't know anything about it. He learned everything by picking it up. I mean, this is crazy, isn't it? You know.
So what happened when you got called up for Suez?
I got called up again, and I had to go right through the rigmarole again. Well, I had my uniform and everything, so all I did was get kitted out for going into a hot weather again. I'm on the boat again, but this time it's not a very long journey, is it? It's up to Egypt. I got there and boom, 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 went there, and he said, right, I want you to help us set up, like you learnt in Korea, with all your wireless and your radios and your telephone, set it all up for us.
A command post, and
show you how it's done. And I did, and he said, yes, very good, my God, you're very good, weren't you? You must have learnt quite a lot. I said, yes, I did, sir. I'm a tradesman.
Whereabouts were you, do you know?
Oh, I don't know where I was. Somewhere in Egypt.
In the canal zone,
somewhere. But as I say, I was only there 3 weeks, and it finished. And they said, right, you can go home now. So I went home for three bloody weeks. Went back to the thing. He said, you can go straight home. Boom, I went back to the tower. He said, go straight home now. So I said, right, boom, back again.
So did you do, you did that the full 5 years, so
yeah.
Till 58?
Yeah, well, I did. After that, seriously, they never called on me again. I didn't do anything after that. Didn't do a thing.
Now, what about what about your life? What job did you go back to? Do you see what I mean?
Oh, when I came out of the army, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, I tried to get into the post office they didn't want to know me because he said he wasn't interested in army training. He said, he's all right, so-and-so. I nearly thumped him, being that he was so old. Like me. He was on 3 months and he was retiring, this bloke, and he was sitting in his chair. I couldn't see it. He had a bowler hat on, and he sat in his chair with his feet up on the desk, and he said, "Doing our bit for our country, lad." And I thought, "You bloody bastard." He said, you're too old. I know, he said, "It sounds funny, you're not old, but you're too old for us." He said, "We like blokes from school, and you're 20, he said now. And he said, "Too late," he said, and "you're army trained. We don't like, we don't consider that training." So I thought, oh, bugger off then. Anyway, I went out there and I got myself a job back to the factory. Back to the factory that I worked years before. I'll tell you when I used to.
Well, you just said various jobs.
Yeah, well, I went back to this same factory and they took me on again.
What factory was that?
That was that. It was a clothing factory, and I did the same thing, you know. But obviously, I was a lot older. I took all the work up and down. I made sure everybody had work.
You did mention that, yeah.
Yeah, but I went back
and
there.
That was what you
that
did.
Was a different bloke that was in there at the time. It was a different, but he liked me, the bloke, the foreman, and we got on very well.
Now, can we just, had the war, you know, your military service, had it affected you in any way, mentally or physically, or bad?
Couldn't sleep at night. My mum said straight away, "You've changed. I really have grown up, haven't I?" She said, "You just changed completely." And, it was terrible. I couldn't settle down at all. I went from job to job. I just couldn't settle down. I really couldn't. It just unsettles you because, first of all, I'm an only child and all of a sudden I'm with loads of men, which are now like my brothers, and now I'm back on my own again. And I actually applied to go to Australia, but I changed my mind at the end. My father said, "Go," he said, "if you don't like it there, I will pay your fare back home." And I thought, yeah, of course you will, you leave me there. But really, then I wanted to go to Canada. I was thinking about that bloke I met in the army. He said, "Come out and we'll both join up and we'll become partners in Canada, doing the roads in Canada." There were loads of new highways being built in Canada. And he said, "We'll buy some old army vehicles, because you can buy them cheap," he said, "and we'll go as partners and we'll do the tarmacking on the road." And I said, "Oh, that's a good idea." And then I changed my mind. And it's funny, when you're that age, you keep I just couldn't settle down to anything. I really could not.
So, I mean, so that's one thing. But had your military service done you any good or harm physically or mentally?
Well, not really. I think physically it really made me, and mentally it made me, because it brought me out. It made me change completely, a made man of me, if you like. They say join the army, and it's true. It just does do that to you. And I'm afraid of nothing. I could, I got different jobs in offices, and I worked my way up. And then I got this job in the insurance company. I started as an agent, and I worked my way up to a top manager in 5 years. I worked my way up.
And you put some of that down to your military.
Whatever I did in the army, I did in my job, and it worked. Because what they say is, if it works, don't change it. And that's the way I learnt. I learnt how to command blokes. I learnt how to do things. I learnt the army way. I didn't use it military to them, but I used the same sort of system, and it worked. And it worked for me. And of course, I did hard work. I worked very hard to get. I took on things that other men didn't want to do. And I worked my way up, and I worked. I took on because first of all, I was a life inspector, and I was the top of the country salesman. Then I got promoted as what they call a section manager, which you just have six men under you. Well, this is music to my ears. This is something that I didn't do before. And I took on a thing which a man defaulted on six books. He stole money from six books. You know, these books that go around agents, he went round, stole all the money, and I had to go around and do an audit on it. And before I walked in the house, I knew he'd take the money, because it was big. Small amounts he didn't bother about, big amounts. Anyway, I sorted all that out. I got all the, and they promoted me again, and I went to Enfield office, and I took over as...
That was your career in insurance?
I could have been right to Manchester. I could have been assistant general manager, but my wife in there wouldn't move, so I didn't get it. I didn't do the job.
Now, the last thing is you membership for the British Korean Veterans Association.
Yes.
Now, is that important to you? What does that do for you?
Oh, it's a it brings all men that I've known before. It brings us, we meet every month. We talk over all the old, which doesn't interest anybody else but us, of course. It brings back, I went back to Korea in 2000.
Now, tell me about that visit.
Oh, that was fantastic. I didn't really want to go, because loads of blokes still don't want to go back. And I got on the plane and I thought, what am I doing on this damn plane going back to that horrible bloody place again? And then when we landed and we got to Seoul, I got out to Seoul and I thought, I've landed in New York. This is the plane's gone wrong. And I couldn't believe that Seoul was like that anymore. And we stayed at this beautiful hotel for 10 days. And as I say, I met a man. His wife came up to me and she said to me, I think my husband remembers you. I said, does he? The only thing he remembers you of is your smile and your hair, because you had thick hair. And it was my best friend, Derek. And I thought, I couldn't believe it. He's out here. He couldn't walk. And I said, Derek, it can't be you. What was it, Derek? Yeah. I know it's Derek. And I thought, remember I said to you, when he said this is the Tsar, it was him. That he was such a comical guy. And I thought, I just can't believe it. His wife was Mark. Oh, she was a lovely girl. And I met another man who just couldn't remember it until the last couple of days, and he remembered me. And he said, I remember you. He was a cook. I remember you walking past the cookhouse, he said one day. He said, isn't it funny? Just come to me, he said. We had a... I mean, they treated us like... I can't explain. They treated us like gods. You just don't believe how they treated us. I mean, they took us, you know, everywhere. We went into this old village. And because there's no old villages left in Korea at all now. They've all gone. They've all been pulled down. They get a hill and they pull the whole hill down. They flatten it and they put... Anyway, we're in this recoil of this village, and it happened to be near Easter. It was, and all the school children are off. And I'm standing there, and all these little school children are going by, and this little girl, she waves at me like this. And I go, "Oi." And so they came up to me, and they speak in English. They're learning English. What's your name? And they're writing it down. Where are you from? And they're writing it down. And all of a sudden, I said to her, "Oh, aren't you beautiful?" I said, "You survived then, didn't you?" And I thought, what am I talking about? This is not the same little girl that when I was in Korea that I came across was dying on the road. This is a different... And before I knew it, they were all jumping on me and hanging on my arm. Meet me. And they were saying, "You're like the Pied Piper of Hemp." They had to rescue me from these little children. They wouldn't leave me alone. I can't describe it. It was just a crazy moment in time when these little children were cuddling me and hanging onto my legs. I said, "Yeah, I'm talking along with these little kids," and the teachers were laughing away, you know. And my mate said, "You should have been a school teacher." He said, "You've got the right aptitude for it."
What was the story you said about the girl lying by the road?
The little girl. Oh, yeah.
You might not want to.
No, I don't want to.
Okay, no, that's fine. I guess that's what it was.
I don't want to remember that.
So, what year was it you went back?
2000.
And do you think it was all worthwhile in the end, the Korean War, your part in it, everything that?
Well, talking to you now between you and me, Peter, what has it sold? The only thing it sold was that they were divided into North and South Korea. There's 50,000 American troops still border on the border. They've never signed a peace treaty. It's only a ceasefire. They meet every day and they just close the book and they walk out the same. They've done it for over 50 years and you think to yourself, well, what has it achieved? What have we achieved? Especially when I saw this program I don't know if you saw it, with Snow, the two Snow, the son and the father. Every week they did a different battle. Anyway, they did the Battle of the Imjin River. I mentioned hardly of British troops were there. It was like only the Americans were there. Well, we've had a go at the BBC over it. And he said, when MacArthur, that was it, MacArthur, I knew it straight away. He won the Battle of Inchon, he forced them back over the North Parallel. They could have stopped there and everybody would have finished the war there and none of us after that would have ever gone out there. But he didn't want that, MacArthur. He wanted to take North Korea and go into China and take, and because that was it. And that's why the Chinese poured in, 250,000 troops poured into North Korea. Of course, the war went on for another, and it's still, and they don't want to know. Gradually, little bits and pieces, they're beginning to do things like they built a road which ends at the 38th parallel, and if they ever do sign up here, they can go straight through this highway. It's called the Superhighway, which was never there when we were there. And they go up to the border, and we went up to the border. Americans are there. Oh, they make me laugh. They don't learn anything. They've got guards. They're 6'7", all of them. And they stand there like they're in the OK Corral with their guns like this. And they're looking this side, and the North Koreans are looking. The North Koreans are looking at you, and you are looking at the North Koreans. And they're all standing there with guns like this. And you think, I'm in the Wild West, because this is... This is like a Hollywood movie they're making here. And we were laughing at. I mean, we were stopped three times before by the Americans. And they got on there searching us three times before we got to Panmunjom. And then when we got to Panmunjom, they let us, they treat us well. They got into their place where they are. And we were talking to this American captain. And he said, yes, what we do is we come over here. We serve 2 years in here. We save enough money, we go back to America, and he said, we start our own business, he said, we become lawyers and all. And he was quite, and we were sitting, and the food again, they served us food there, was fantastic. I mean, their food, you got to get it. They gave us a dinner. It was fantastic, absolutely fantastic. And then we went back again, and they were so interested in the soldiers. They showed us a map, where were you? Like, there, we showed. Yeah. Where was Pork Chop Hill? That's all they know. Where's Pork Chop? That was Pork Chop Hill. That's Old Baldy. No, that's... Oh, no, where were you? You know, and we'd... Oh, there. Oh, were you there? What was it like? Oh, God. Oh, I don't know.